Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from absinthe to Zinfandel. Drinkage à toi.
Hello and welcome again to It's the Drink Talking, a podcast all about drink. We're going to be spending the next half an hour to 40 minutes talking about all things drink, tasting some nice drinks, things to suggest for you for your weekend ahead. My name's Tom Sandham, I'm a spirits expert and I am hosting today's show, and I'm here as ever with my friends, my colleagues, my co-drinks experts, Sam Capon, the Mistress of Wine.
Hi.
Hello, Sam. And Ben McFarland, a beer writer and fellow thinking drinker. Hello, Ben.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah. And all the better for seeing you again.
Again.
But welcome to our podcast. And as ever, we're going to start off with a spittle swallow, and I'm going to crack straight on with it. And I think the first thing I'm going to talk about is my spit.
I was about to say myself.
Yeah, well, I'm good at that. Aren't I, Sam? Lots to say.
My best. But
I'm going to talk about Coca-Cola. Any fans of Coca-Cola in the room?
I try not to drink it because of the high calorie and sugar content. Mm. But sometimes if you're hungover, there's just nothing like the Black Doctor. Yes. However, I've tried to move to Diet Coke. I did have one this morning. I'm not a caffeine drinker. So sometimes if I'm really tired or hungover, that's my go-to.
Right. It's a very sugary drink. I think if you drink it in moderation, maybe that's fair enough if you know the limits of its sugariness.
I do think, it's the voice. One of my
advices. Well, that's the way to look
at it.
Do
you drink Coke?
Soft drinks. I'm partial to it.
Full fat or DC?
Full fat.
I don't understand why you wouldn't go full fat, I'll be honest.
It's like 400 calories versus zero.
Well, I know, but have you noticed? I'm a big man. But a lot of fat people seem to drink Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Like the Diet Coke man.
Should be remodeled.
Obviously, that doesn't drink Diet Coke.
That is a sexist ad as well, while we're on it.
Yeah.
God, outrageous. I mean, just looking at men as objects.
Disgusting.
No one ever looks at me as an object. That's mostly
and he's doing menial work.
Yeah. Coca-Cola, as we would say in our show, its roots are in Vin Mariani, a mix of red wine and coca leaves.
Is this your spit?
This is my spit, but just on this... They used to serve it with the coca leaves in it, cocaine, which was gave you a proper lift. And then they changed the recipe into Coca-Cola as we know it today. It is my spit because Coca-Cola is to produce its first alcoholic drink in its 132-year history, with an Alcopop in Japan. And this is jumping on the bandwagon of a successful range of drinks called Chu-hi or Chu-hai, which are canned sparkling-flavoured drinks in Japan that include the local spirit shochu. And Coca-Cola have seen the success of these Alcopops, and they're jumping on this bandwagon. And the reason it made me spit a little bit is like, well, just back off, really. No. Two things. Coca-Cola is a soft drink, and it is certainly marketing itself as a non-alcoholic drink, so don't get involved in the world of alcohol. You've got no business in it. It's kind of slightly sinister to suddenly say, well, drink this product and it's got alcohol in it. My second problem with it is Alcopops in general. I felt like we were kind of past the glory days of Alcopops, which were occurring...
Which, lucky for us, were in
they
our
were right in our
youth.
Zone,
so, to be
1990s,
they were brilliant.
That was a massive time.
Bit of,
helped me learn to drink.
Hooch.
Well, 2020. I think the classic the pioneers were Two Dogs.
Yeah. Two Dogs was a big one, the lemonade.
Then Hooch.
And the Hooch.
And Smirnoff Ice.
Smirnoff Ice.
Reef.
I used to drink Reef, not realising it was it's about... What,
with it.
Because
well,
I had it for breakfast a couple of times, yeah, thinking, wow.
Well, just, yeah, I mean, I'd have a
and it is, had absolutely no alcoholic flavour to it whatsoever.
Well, this is the problem with alcohol pops, isn't it, Ben? We've had this discussion in the past, and I think it's the fact that you're masking the flavours of alcohol with something that tastes slightly nicer, that's slightly more appealing to a younger audience. And really, as we grew up, although you say that in the 90s, our legal drinking ages, but when I was first sampling alcohol, my parents, not really that forward-thinking, allowing us to have a glass of wine with dinner at the age of 14, it was something that was quite difficult to tackle. And the message there was, teach yourself to drink this. Don't just assume you can just scull it and have all the good effects of being drunk. And Alco-Pops swoops in and allows us to drink things without a great...
That's it. What kids have it too easy these days.
Do have it too easy. Kids need to drink raw Isla whiskey. That'll learn.
Well, if, for instance, if you saw some kids smashing up a bus stop after drinking too much and you grabbed them by the collar, because that's how you deal with them, and said, what have you been drinking? And they went, I've been drinking Lagavulin. And you'd go... Well done.
Yes.
I'd
join in.
Yeah.
I'd pick up a bat and I'd join in with them.
You clearly go through
good
a phase.
Good boys. Good boys. But not if they were drinking Reef
Dogs. Well, this goes back...
Reef and Two Dogs, what's the ABV of them roughly?
Well, they were about 5%.
Yeah, they were quite a lot.
It's like having a bottle of beer, isn't it?
And then the big one, of course, was Bacardi Breezer. And my claim to fame is that I got flown out by the Bacardi Breezer PR team to California, to Hollywood, where I interviewed the Bacardi Breezer cats. Do you remember that advert with that cat at a party? Do you remember that? They were sort of bowling around in a party.
Do not remember.
It wasn't a great advert. But there were three cats because they get tired. And they were all in this Winnebago, just like film stars.
I thought you were going
to
say no.
And you walked in and literally I sat down. They introduced me to the cats. Everyone else left apart from the PR girl.
I had three cats.
I thought they were
cats, like as in like cool cats.
No, that's not cool cats. No. Actual cats.
Like pussy cats.
I initially thought they were going to be cheerleaders.
Would you?
Well, no. Didn't make the greatest article, I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, got free you can write what you like at least.
Yes, exactly.
I've had trouble seeing you. This is going to be about 3-8%. ABV, the chew heat.
But just for the Japanese market.
For the Japanese market, yeah. Are they using shochu, which actually shochu is quite a sort of a refined spirit. In fact, there are two types of shochu. One branch of the shochu distillate is quite refined and uses barley, and the other uses molasses, so perhaps less refined. But
well, I imagine, I've not tasted it, but I imagine if it's going to be like any other alcohol pops of which we've talked about, it's going to be drowned out with sugary, soft.
Yeah, I imagine it doesn't matter what they use. No. They could, in fact, molasses would be better because is there molasses in Coca-Cola? There might be some sort of sugary...
It's a secret recipe, Tom, surely.
Yeah. Syrupy. I mean, it's sugar, so there's a lot of sugar in it.
Yes.
So it would probably work quite well with that, I imagine. So with a molasses-based spirit. I think they've got no business in it. I mean, Coca-Cola at the moment as well, it's sort of a bit, depending on where you go. We were in Mexico not so long ago. If you go out to Africa, the big Coca-Cola plants are using a lot of water to make their product. And they're under a bit of fire. There's a bit of a PR mess for them at the moment in Cape Town, is one area where they've had the local population have said, can we have some of our water back, please? Because there isn't a lot of it here, and you're using it for your plant. Not exclusively. Obviously, there are beer brewers who are doing the same thing. But you just feel at this time, we're all looking at sugar and sugar intake. Is this really the time for Coca-Cola be talking about getting an alcohol substance in their drink
I think they're probably reacting to alcohol producers stepping on their patch, because Anheuser-Busch recently bought SAB, Miller, pardon me, South African breweries. It doesn't make an entire amount of sense why they would buy them from a brewing point of view, because it was a lot of money and there was a bit of cannibalisation there. But actually the reason a lot of people say they bought SAB Miller was because SAB Miller have the distribution in Africa, massive distribution, and that actually the real opportunity there is soft drinks, non-alcoholic beers and soft drinks.
Non-alcoholic.
Yeah.
That is why they're buying into that market.
So that is, I mean, the market there is massive, and they're taking on people like Coca-Cola.
They are.
So the gloves are off.
They are, but the reason that they're doing that is because they know the future is potentially non-alcoholic. So for Coca-Cola to go the other way.
Yeah.
But they tried, Coca-Cola and Pepsi tried to take on Red Bull.
With an energy drink.
Yeah, Coca-Cola was Burn, I think. It was years and years ago. That was a sort of foray into the soft drinks market, an energy market, but that obviously was designed to go with spirits as well.
Yeah.
So they've had a stab at it. That failed.
But they also own other massive brands. Like, they bought Innocent, right?
They did.
You know, they see big, successful brands, they'll just buy them up.
Yeah. I think they should back off.
Yeah.
Back
off the booze. It's not your business. Literally, it's not your business. And my swallow this week is about a message in a bottle that has been washed up on a beach in Australia. Thought to be the oldest message in a bottle ever found.
That's quite romantic.
It was found in a gin bottle, which is why it's relevant. The only reason it's relevant to our gin podcast,
good.
Gentlemen, is because it was found in a gin bottle.
Do we know which gin it was?
Well, it was an old Genever Dutch gin bottle.
Ooh.
So it's quite a fantastic looking bottle. 132 years
old. Can
you
imagine how excited any of our kids would be to receive a message in a bottle from 132
years ago?
Well,
this is it.
I think that's awesome.
I was quite excited by it. And
that's history coming to life.
When we're finding a lot of plastic bottles in the ocean, it was nice that it was in a glass. Yeah.
Was it glass or was it one of the sort of clay Geneva?
No, it was a glass one. It was one of those old green, proper old gin bottles.
That's incredible to have survived for that
long. Isn't it, just? And in the bottle, apparently, they managed to dry it out and they found out that it was the location of where they put it in the water. So,
which is where?
It was just some coordinates. I mean, what a shit message. I mean, they put the coordinates of where they put it in.
They were trying
to test.
That's
irrelevant because
it wasn't an experiment. They were trying to test water flow they're doing something.
There was a reason, but it got me looking into other messages that have washed up in bottles. There are many. Unfortunately, someone did a bit of research into this and found at least 10 that aren't as old as this, and at least 3 of them were in plastic bottles, which does go against my ambitions for this being sustainable in some way. Interestingly, people are still doing this around the world. Have either of you ever done it? Have you ever put a message in a bottle?
I have.
No, well, the only thing I've done similar to this...
Ian, our
producer, has.
Has he? And what did you do, Ian?
As kids, we did it in the south of France, and we got a reply from a French family about 3 months later.
That's incredible.
And then we stayed in touch for a few years.
Yeah. I'm going to do that.
Really?
I'm going to make that my mission of the summer. Go down to Brighton, lob a glass bottle off the pier.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Aim high.
There are a few that have turned up. A 23-year-old kite surfer. He found one on a Croatian beach, and the message read, "Mary, you're a great person. I hope we can keep in correspondence. I said I would write your friend always, Jonathan, Nova Scotia, 1985. So Nova Scotia to Croatia. I would argue, Jonathan, that isn't the best way to keep in touch. In 1985, there were other ways.
Yeah.
A Dutch couple in Holland, they found a bottle that had come from a ferry travelling from Hull to Belgium. And this was from a 10-year-old. "Dear Finder, my name is Zoe Lemon. Please would you write to me? I would like it a lot. I'm 10 years old and I like ballet, playing the flutes and the piano. I have a hamster called Sparkle and a fish called Speckle." Isn't that nice? And they managed to track her down to her Dutch address. So that's a beautiful end to that story. But one of my favourites was a couple that during the war were trying to stay in touch. And this was found in Dingle in Ireland in 1946. The time spent at sea was only 8 months, this bottle. And it was on Christmas Day in 1945, 21-year-old American World War veteran Frank Hayestek tossed a bottle over the side of his troop carrier with a note tucked inside. And 8 months later, it was found near Dingle by Brader O'Sullivan. What followed was 7 years of letters that exchanged. Much like you, Ian, you stayed in touch. Yeah. And this couple set up, they became pen pals and became quite close to each other over that time, over letters, and then finally met in 1952, and when he saved enough money to fly to Ireland, all off the strength of this message in a bottle. And this was another alcohol bottle, this was a beer bottle, so it's still relevant, listeners, if you think we've gone off message. And they actually finally met, and the story finishes, they saved enough money to fly to Ireland amid an international media circus over the story. but the pair were never able to get a romance off the ground.
Really?
Lovely stuff. Well, that's nice, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, no, it was worth it. You know, Benny flying over thinking, I am so in there.
Yeah.
This is going to happen.
Had
and
they
then,
seen any photographic evidence?
Yeah, they sent photos.
Before.
They
yeah,
sent
yeah,
photos and they thought they fancied each other, but when they got there, it just didn't
click. Chemistry wasn't there.
Yeah.
Not
I mean,
there. What
happens
a
lot, doesn't it, Ben?
It does, yeah.
So that's
internet dating is
especially
both
when you're married, because the lies you've got to tell.
I know.
I mean, it's
yeah,
just not cricket. Anyway, wives.
My wife thinks we go on tour every weekend.
As if anyone would pay money to see that shit. Talking of which, we are on a yeah, tour and yeah, we will be available in theatres around the UK. So that's my spit or swallow.
Can I just say that reminded me of a very brief and fairly interesting story. When I was at primary school, we all had to do message. We attached a message to a balloon.
Okay.
And let it off from our playground, all of us. And this was in Notting Hill, get me. primary school called Fox, pretty cool. Probably about 4 miles from my house. 2 days later, my next door neighbour knocked on my door. My balloon landed in my next door neighbour's garden.
Got caught in the trees, as you were saying, off from
no,
your
no,
garden.
No. What are the chances? Well, I don't know what I can tell you.
It's not
very,
a very
rare,
large surface area.
It also
to
made
cover,
quite
though,
an impression,
it?
Ben.
Sort of like it went up and came down again.
If you said it came north, east, south, or west, I mean, that is unlikely.
This is, it's quite
and the fact that no other balloons from my class.
No.
Mohammed Abutaleb, this little kid, he's from the Yemen, is allergic to the sun. His balloon got burst on the fence as it left, and he cried.
And unless they set those balloons off at night, that's a bit mean. He couldn't even watch it go.
No, he stood in the shade.
Yeah, that's harsh.
He was also allergic
to... just went in a tree.
No, I mean, he was allergic to self-raising flour as well, because he came to my Halloween party, and we were doing apple dunking.
Ben, how can you remember it's just, all this shit?
It's really hard.
Like,
I find with that problem, it's really hard to lift people.
No, yeah. I know. And he dunked that and then put his face in the flour and then started going,
no.
And had to get taken to hospital. It was pretty bad. But he was a liar because he came to my house when he was about 10 and said, I've moved next door.
But he hadn't.
I was delighted, I was a mate of mine,
and then I went next door and I knocked on the door and said, is Mohammed Abutaleb
here? The balloon neighbour.
And they were like, what?
No.
And they were like, no.
Well, thanks, Ben. Thanks for insights into your life.
If you're listening, Mohammed,
I miss you. What happens when you start a chain of conversation about bottles and you should have put it in the water. I put a message in a bottle in the ground. It's
That's a time capsule.
Time capsule, yeah. So that was my spittle
well
swallow.
Well done, Tom.
Yeah, just a slightly different tangent for this week.
It's good.
But let's have something to drink. And today we are, it's your turn, Sam, so we're going to be drinking some wine. What have we got?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a podcast. It's the Drink Talking.
You know what? We haven't done fizz since our first podcast. So we are revisiting bubbles.
Bubbles.
But actually, value bubbles. This is the kind of time of year when you get a lot. I don't know if you chaps have this. There's quite a lot of press tastings going on at the moment.
No, well, yeah, but we're not real journalists.
The kind of spring, summer ranges. And the last one, we did a Prosecco and a Champagne. So this week, we're going to do a Carver and a Crémant de Loire. So nice these accent. Are both from Aldi, and the Carver's only $4.99, and the Crémant is $7.99.
That's
and
good value.
Great
$4.99.
value.
$4.99? Oh, they, my God. I'm getting aroused.
I just, well, I was going to say this is going to be a good aphrodisiac for you. Good price, bubbles, you know.
Booze.
Booze.
I need a drink.
And I just thought for spring, you know, put spring in the step, fizzy. Aldi do great value, sparkling
they
wines.
They do.
So what I wanted to talk about is, do you know how Carver's made?
In the same way as champagne.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
In Spain.
Because when I was looking at Prosecco and trying to make a case for it, I looked into Carver and thought, well, Carver actually much closer to the champagne method noir, whatever it's called.
It was called the method champenoise. That's the traditional method. But exactly. So it's very good value, made in the traditional method. The grapes are different. Even though increasingly they're using Chardonnay, this is a classic blend of Macabeo, Perolada, and Zerolo. So three quite sort of unusual.
Fancy why it didn't take off.
great varieties.
All native Spanish grapes, are they?
So Macabeo is also called a Viera in Rioja. But they used to call Spanish sparkling wine Champagne, and the Champenoise weren't that keen on that. So they changed it to Carver, meaning the underground cellars or cave in Spain where the wine is aged on lees. Because it's made in the same way. So you've got the second fermentation in bottle. Unlike non-vintage champagne, which has to have a year on the lees, this only has to have 9 months.
Even so, if you're ticking all of those boxes, the disparity in price compared to champagne, why is that? The French have been savvy and they've managed to get there first. And
I think a lot of it's price, as in the champagne vineyards are monumentally expensive. Like, I think just to buy the raw ingredient, to buy the fruit from Champagne, is quite a lot of money.
Okay.
So that's definitely more expensive. But no, the cost of doing the second fermentation and aging it on lees is going to be largely the same. I suspect a bit of it is, yes, is marketing, but I suspect the biggest issue is the raw materials.
Let's get on to the taste. The land.
I guess because however Champagne has got the reputation of being champagne, it is arguably, you know, the most sort of prestigious sparkling wine in the world and, you know, does command fairly high prices and consequently, you know, the vineyards are really expensive.
The Prosecco thing has absolutely boomed because of the price, and it is sweeter and slightly easier to drink for some people, for the mass market.
It's
a very different style. You, as a master of wine, if you do blind tastings, or you do tastings, comparative tastings with champagne, is the taste of this, is the best Carver as good as the best champagne? Or is it fair to say that champagne actually is a better tasting product?
It's all personal taste. For me, I would say I prefer champagne.
Okay.
I prefer the grape varieties. Zerolo, Perolada and Macabeo, they do give the wine a slightly different taste of champagne. I think as soon as you start having less time on lees, you're also affecting it.
It doesn't have that acidic bite, does it?
I'm really enjoying it.
Are you?
Yeah, I mean, we have...
You're not a big champagne fan.
Champagne is quite dry. Yes.
there are
other reasons, Ben. But I am a fan of this at $4.99.
But it's really easy drinking. It's called Contevido Carver. So C-O-N-T-E-V-E-D-O. Yeah, $4.99. Also, hilariously, they do have a bottle that is covered in, like, I guess a gold or something. So that's quite... They have quite a flash bottle that's quite fun for parties and stuff. This was a slightly more pared-down, kind of premium-looking gold label.
The one where
the bottle's all gold is actually quite fun. But yeah, I mean, there's a bit of residual on here for me. There's a tiny bit of sweetness in the finish. It's 11.5% alcohol, quite apply, quite fresh. Bit yeasty on the finish.
It's really nice.
This is basically the Spanish version of champagne.
But which champagne? So if I took this around to a friend's house and said, we're having Carver, I didn't bring champagne, and they turn around and are like, you cheap bastard. But actually, it's because this is the equivalent in quality and flavour to which champagne? What price point? Come on, I'm looking to really hit them over the head. Just with
a
handless
piece of string. I think that's quite a difficult question to answer. I mean, they are a different product. They are grown in a different place, different climate, different soils, different grapes. This is not Spanish champagne. This is Cava.
Yeah.
And in the same way that champagne, people wouldn't want you saying it's champagne, the Cava wouldn't want you saying it's champagne.
So that's what you should say, Tom. You should say, listen, right? Stop trying to compare Cava to champagne, because Cava is completely different and it can stand up on its own without being...
That's what I will say. I'll also say I didn't want to come anyway. I don't like leaving my house. I like being in my pyjamas watching Netflix.
Yeah. With my glass
of milk. You're lucky I'm here and here's my gift to you.
You're lucky I didn't bring a fork.
I do think the Cava people have a more serious job to do about reputation of Cava. Like, you know, you say Prosecco and you automatically have thoughts in your head.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Prosecco is kind of, fun and frothy and fruity and it's good value, but it's just, you know, it's quite a party wine,
and
a more everyday drinking wine. And it's like champagne and you automatically think kind of like premium quality France. And I think Cava at the moment just hasn't managed to carve its niche in the same way that they have. And they're completely polarizing. You know, you've got tank method versus, you know, champagne method, traditional method. And Cava, I guess, kind of sits in the middle, as in it's nearer Prosecco prices, but champagne style. And they just haven't managed, really, to carve that niche for themselves.
If you had £10
yes.
to spend on a champagne,
yep.
a Prosecco or a Cava,
yep.
where would you put your money?
I'd squeak in an extra quid, Veuve Monsigny from Aldi, £10.99, champagne.
That wasn't the question. So you go £10.
Okay, £8. At what point? What price point would you drop?
Okay, just so
it's basically Cava versus Prosecco. Yeah, because you're not going to get a champagne at that price.
Exactly. I would go for Cava, and Sainsbury's do a really good taste the difference vintage Cava as well.
Okay,
which is probably about 8 quid, depends on a promotion, but that's definitely under 10 quid. Yeah, I did that on Saturday Kitchen once with a dish. It's a really nice wine. And you can get delicious, like, the two main producers are Fraisinet and Cordonnieu. They're the two
producers. That's sort of my issue with Cava, is that both those brands, in my mind, it rings alarm bells.
Oh, no, I think there's no alarm bells.
No, but I just think if you're bringing a bottle of sparkling wine, those two...
Oh, I see.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd rather bring a slightly more nondescript Cava. Mm.
Yeah.
I'm conscious we're sort of dragging this tasting out a bit, but it is combining a lot of my favourite things, which is cheap price point and things to say when I give people a gift.
exactly.
Well, I'm going to move on now, and I really like this one. So this is, again, an affordable champagne alternative made in the traditional method. It's a Crémant de Loire, Crémant sparkling wine, dirt from Loire. So from Loire. And it's a Blanc de Noir, and it's made from 100% Cabernet Franc.
Oh.
Now, you, that's actually quite really unusual, but I see what you think.
Like the way
made, I'm about to say, you're thinking, I'm about to challenge you on that.
Franc.
So it's 100% Cabernet Franc, which makes red wines usually that are quite tight acid, quite tannic, quite sort of lifted. And here I just find this is also made in the traditional method. So you've got kind of yeasty notes, but it's quite tight. It's got lots of kind of raspberry pip. Very tight bubbles, quite an aggressive mousse.
It's not a lot.
You know, but I find this very linear, quite taut. I find this really elegant.
I
love this.
It's just going to sound like a silly thing to say, but that hasn't stopped me in the past.
Yeah, why? But
this is like a white wine, but with bubbles in.
Going to what you're saying about gifting and wanting something that looks premium and then that's not as massive.
So
brand,
listeners, there's a black sort of label.
It says with Chateau on it.
Says Le Chateau, but it's spelt different.
Yeah, that's the brand name.
And it looks like a sort of French version of a Taj Mahal on the front.
They've gone black and white and red as a colour scheme. I always think that's a bit 80s,
a bit 80s. Black Tower, but still.
I like the crest at the top. You want to talk us through that?
Basically, if you went to a party crest. And flashed that past people's eyes and whacked it in the fridge and then took out a champagne, that's how to play that one. But I like this more than the Cava.
Yeah, me too.
This is softer.
And it's just long and it's elegant. Yeah. And yeah, so that's $4.99. So I think you can rightly assume if we're paying $7.99, almost double, you're going to get a better wine. But I think this is sensational. And I think for $7.99...
Yeah, and I think, just looking at it, I think you get more bubbles for your pound. It seems to be more bubbly.
Yeah, get more bubbles, really long, that yeasty, lovely yeasty length.
Long.
So yeah, that was the Le Château Crémant de Loire Blanc de Noir, and that is $7.99.
That's good. That's good.
glad you like the fish.
But also, can I just say that when we had Mother's Day the other day, oh, it was quite a while ago now, the in-laws came round and they had all had Buck's Fizz. It was sort of, we had a brunch.
Yeah.
And obviously, you don't want to get out of the good stuff if you're mixing it. So this is...
That's perfect.
That,
yeah. Well, $7.99, you're paying that for a bottle of Prosecco.
Crème de Loire is so delicious, I would never mix that. I mean, it's so good, I would drink that on its own. But then the Cava is a more approachable, Appley style. This is more what you'd, you know, that can be drunk on its own or as a mixer. But they're both fantastic spring valley fizz.
Well, I really enjoyed those.
They're great.
It's a nice alternative to champagne, which I don't like so much. So there we go. Thank you very much, Sam.
Welcome.
That's set us up nicely. Once again, a few bubbles straight to the head.
Straight to the head.
So it's going to make your, whatever you say, seem funny now, Ben.
Well, it's going to be good. Brace yourself. This is going to be the funniest 5 minutes of your life.
No one else has been drinking the champagne, Ben. Just us.
No, well, it's funny that we've been talking about bubbles, because the beer legend that I'm going to be talking about now was responsible for one of the most famous bubbly beers. We're going to go back a while to the 19th century, the 1830s.
Nice, good skills, mate.
Good skills, because I always get those mixed up.
Is it the 18th century? The 19th means 18.
Yes, so back in the 1830s, there was a kind of unofficial race between the Bavarians, the Germans, and the Bohemians, which is kind of new money, sort of the Czech Republic, as to who was going to be brewing the best lager-style beer.
Who won?
Well, I'm about to tell you. It's not this guy. It's not really this guy. He came second out of two. So he's not that much of a legend. No, he sort of is. He's a guy called Gabriel Sedlmeyer.
He had a
son called Gabriel Sedlmeyer as well. So they were called Gabriel Sedlmeyer and Son. Are now very important to Bavarian brewing, because what they did is they bought a brew pub in 1807, with a brew pub which dates back to the 14th century, which is 1397.
God,
see, I'm consistent, if nothing else. It's a Spade brewery. It's a tiny little brewery, not much to write home about in Munich back then. And they turned this brewery into what is probably Munich's most esteemed brewery and the envy of Europe, because the Sedlmeyers... Well, this is a kind of lesson to be learned from these guys. Often when we talk about craft brewing and traditional brewing, any modern techniques are kind of seen as cheating or corner cutting, and people
embrace... No one likes change.
No one likes change. But these guys embraced all the new technologies. So Gabriel the Younger embraced the industrial steam-powered zeitgeist of the time. He invested in Bavaria's first steam engine, and it was steam-propelled trains that enabled him to embark on his tour of European brewing centres. So he went to Austria, Belgium, Denmark and Holland, where he was sort of found...
What, on structure. His own train?
No, he didn't have his own train, but he...
That's a shame.
He invested in...
The story is getting quite
under
exciting.
His own steam, very good.
Toot, toot.
And he went over to Britain, where Britain was hailed at the time. It was the most important... Yeah, it was back there. It was the most...
it was rule Britannia back then.
It was a bit Brexit, that was.
That's what I thought.
Yes, it was kind of seen as the pioneering...
We take no political view.
No, although that is a stupid idea, isn't it?
It's just costing so much money.
It's so boring. Billions. Why is everyone... Let's just stay.
We're losing, it's all right. We're losing a connection to this sort of story. This German beer.
This is the Germans. But listen, this is the Brexiteers are going to love what happened here.
They did start a war with the world.
They did. Twice.
Yeah, you think we'd have a go at them the first time and say, no, not
right,
doing that
again. Anyway, well, this might be why it started. Probably not. He came over here to find out about malting techniques, because the British...
Oh, my God, your story is just...
Yeah, I know. It's just a bit of the lull before the good bit.
Them.
Britain were amazing at malting. They, before this time, a lot of malting techniques meant that they were creating dark grains, so a lot of the dark beers, either ales or lager, were of a darker hue. Whereas they started creating pale malt, which back then, with glassware just being invented, was quite exciting. So he came over here, spoke to Bass, famed for the triangle. Remember the triangle?
What a triangle.
Yeah, it's an amazing triangle. that he worked with them, and they also told him about two things very important in brewing. They're thermometers and sacrometers.
Jesus Christ.
Right, okay. So anyway, it's really important. So he picked up loads of techniques, but then all the other British brewers are like, oi, mate, you can't come over here and just nick our techniques. You know, yeah. We're not sharing them with them. He had this walking stick, and what he used to do, he used to walk around breweries and take little samples. It was the first recorded example of industrial espionage.
Wow. Yeah. Was it? Was
and
it?
He
this
wrote this.
Got better.
So he would stuff his walking stick in brewer's
wort. I'm just going to pull you off on that. The first recorded...
In the brewing world, yeah.
Oh, in the brewing world.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Certainly pause and caveat.
Right, so he
and
wrote
probably
this.
Probably not even there. To be fair.
Yeah, I don't even know if it is. If anyone sues us, then well done and you're still listening. Gabriel helped himself by secretly stuffing his walking stick with brewer's wort and yeast. And he said this, "It always surprises me," wrote Stiedelmeyer, "that we can get away with these tests without being beaten up."
Yeah.
So really, we should have kicked his head in.
I've just realised if you put this champagne cork on the end of my pen or pencil, it's quite a nice safety device against my children.
What,
carry on,
Ben. You can't hit them with a cork.
Well, they can't poke themselves in the face.
Anyway, listen, shut up. Because he went back and he started brewing a lager beer using Munich malt and these new techniques. And he launched a new amber lager, which was very revolutionary at the time, called Marzen or March beer. And then he turned this into Helles as well. Later on, he teamed up with the king of refrigeration, a man called Carl Lind, and basically created refrigerated lager beer, which, along with glassware and railways, two things that he invested
trains.
In. And train. Hello.
I like train.
Helles became the beer of Munich. But then it went sort of toe-to-toe with Pilsen, and we talked, remember, Joseph Grohl. Wake up, Sam! Joseph Grohl, the man who invented Pilsner. So anyway, if you go to Munich and you drink any of the Helles-style beers, which are amazing as a style of lager, then he owes himself to Gabriel Stiedelmeyer. And the brewery is still going today. It's called the Spartan Brewery, which means... Are you listening, Sam? Spade Brewery.
Yeah.
That's right. I could have told you that.
Cool, good. So there we are, Gabriel Stiedelmeyer.
A word in support of our producer now, who's going to have to somehow edit that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Compelling audio gold.
Yeah.
Good though.
No, Gabriel said...
Oh, you're not finished, sorry.
No, I have finished. There really is nothing interesting to say about this. But it goes, if you drink Helles, it goes very well.
On.
Very
don't
well with German sausages.
I really enjoyed the espionage and the walking stick. That's going to stay with me all day.
Yeah, he was a sneaky... Yeah.
Why not start that story, Ben? Because what's the worst that could happen?
What's the worst thing with sausages? Well done. So, nice. Gabriel Stiedelmeyer.
Well done, Ben.
The Marzen needs a revisit. That's a good style of beer.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's kind of amber hue.
It features in our book, World's Best Beers.
It does.
It was published late last year.
Yes,
it's available to buy on Amazon.
Yeah, unless, of course, you're an Irish beer fan, which the section is very thin.
Slim,
sorry.
To be sure.
Excellent.
Okay, well done, everyone.
Very enjoyable.
Great times.
Yay!
I am battered off the sparkling. Well done, Sam, for that. Excellent
Thanks.
Beer knowledge from Ben. This is the reason people tune in, to get the real, the hard facts of drinking. And I can't even remember what my spit or swallow was. I'm sure it was good. Well done, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Cheers. Ta-ta.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.